Hello and welcome to Living Downstream. I'm Julie Lowe, the Environmental and Education Outreach Leader through United Communities AmeriCorps and one of the hosts of Living Downstream. Today, our topic is the scientific impacts of fish on the Winchester Dam near Roseburg, and I'm delighted to be speaking with Jeff Dose, a fisheries biologist with 31 years' experience in the Umpqua Basin. Welcome, Jeff, and can you tell us more about yourself?
Thank you, Julie. As you mentioned, I'm a retired fisheries biologist. Been retired for about 11 years now. Was the program manager for the Umpqua National Forest Fisheries Program for 24 years before I retired. Lived most of my life in Oregon and avid fisherman, and have a great interest in all of the Umpqua, and in particular the North Umpqua and its very special attributes of that river. It's an amazing place.
It's a magnificent river. I'm newly moved here and it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Can you give us an overview of the Winchester Dam and
Sure.
its general significance in our area?
Okay. First, I need to make a little disclaimer here. I'm going to focus on the impacts that Winchester Dam has and is having on native anadromous fish in the North Umpqua River. And I'm not going to address the social, political, and economic ramifications of this controversial dam. I'm just going to talk about the biology and how it's affecting our fisheries.
Great, that's awesome.
This is based on my observations over many years, my work with the Forest Service, literature review, reviewing photos and videos from a number of different sources. And I would add that in 2020 and 2021, I spent approximately 260 hours out there on an overlook watching what was going on with fish at that dam, observing fish at the dam. I must also close by saying these thoughts are my own, and I'm not representing any group or organization.
Great, thank you.
So that's my disclaimer. And I'll give you a little background on Winchester Dam and some of the resources that we're talking about here. Winchester Dam was constructed in 1890. It was 4 feet high, approximately, at that time, and did not prevent fish passage. It was raised to its present height of about 17 feet in 1907. But when that was done, a V-notch was provided that allowed for some fish passage at certain flows. The current fish ladder was constructed in 1945 and was opened in 1946. The North Umpqua has one of the most diverse assemblages of native fish among Oregon coastal rivers. Chinook salmon is one of six native anadromous or sea-run salmons, and one salmonid, the Pacific lamprey, that call the North Umpqua home. This includes both spring and fall Chinook, both summer and winter steelhead, coho salmon, and sea-run cutthroat trout, in addition to the Pacific lamprey. So that's quite a diverse number of species. This diversity is actually the result of the unique geology and hydrology of the North Umpqua watershed. It's one of only two coastal river basins that flow directly from the headwaters in the Cascade Mountains to the ocean. The other is the Rogue River. Other coastal rivers in Oregon are either relatively short coast range drainages or they are tributary to the Columbia River. The result of this unique hydrology and geology is that there is greater summer flow and cooler water temperatures than in most other coastal river basins. This condition has led to successful upstream migration, oversummering, spawning, and rearing of these cold water fish year round. The diversity and life histories of these populations means that upstream adult migrants encounter Winchester Dam virtually every month of the year. The next area that I'm going to discuss is impacts from just the presence of the dam. Not necessarily the work that was done this past summer. The dam itself has a number of impacts, just the presence of it, which includes false attraction from stream flows over, under, and through holes in the dam. And this condition causes migrating fish to jump at the dam face in attempts to continue upstream due to these false attraction flows. They don't make it. The result is delay and possible injury from those failed attempts. In warm summertime periods, these delays can result in stress, energy depletion, disease, altered reproductive maturation, and even mortality. There is also a disconnect between the primary summer flow, which is called the thalweg, which is on the very far south side of the river, and the fish ladder entrance, which is on the far north side of the river. In between is about 400 feet of very shallow bedrock, which prevents or retards the fish from finding the ladder entrance. Fish passage engineers from the Army Corps of Engineers who design fish ladders have stated that the entrance location and the attraction flow are the two most critical elements in effective fish passage. And these are, both of those are not found with this present setup.
So where is the entrance location?
It's on the very north side of the river.
Just and then where's...
Just downstream from the main dam.
And then where's the attraction flow?
Attraction flow is on the very south side.
Oh, so opposite sides.
Completely opposite side. And fish are drawn to the primary flow. And so they come up on the south side, and then they have to find their way all the way over with very little attraction flow to the fish ladder. And some do. I mean, it's not a total barrier, but it certainly delays and slows them down. And may result in some injury when they jump and fall and hit bedrock or concrete or metal that is sticking out of the dam.
Well, and tell me, I've been out there, of course. It's a long dam. I don't mean long, I mean wide. So how do the fish eventually, the ones that do find the entrance of the ladder, is there any way to know the percentage that get over there? I mean, they could try all day before they hit the jackpot, I would think.
There's no actual data, but research from other places that look at attraction flows and delay in migration, it could be as long as a week or two before a certain fish could find the fish ladder.
Sure.
Some might find it within hours. It's highly variable. It depends a lot on the river flow.
Right.
When the river's higher, they could probably find their way over easier because it's deeper. They have to go across a really shallow area to get over to the entrance to the fish ladder, very shallow. But at higher flows, it's probably easier for them to find it. But it's still the amount of flow that is attraction from the fish ladder is minuscule compared to the total flow of the river.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just very, very small, probably less than 5% of the total flow is actually attraction flow. So you got fish way over on the south side, a little bit of flow, attraction flow from the fish ladder on the very north side, and in between is a whole bunch of flows that are all false attraction that they try to find.
And then what about human activity where the ladder actually is? I know as a fisherman, you know, when the fish know you're there, does that bother the fish at all? If there's more activity over there where the ladder is?
You mean the viewing area?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I don't think so.
Okay.
It's not my impression that they do.
Okay.
I'm not aware of any actual research on that, but I don't think it bothers them that much.
Well, why was the dam built originally?
It was originally built to operate a small generator that produced electricity for a mill.
Okay.
A sawmill that was constructed on this right on the south bank near where the current concrete generator house is.
Mm-hmm. And then you said that originally it was 4 feet and then it was raised to 17. Why would you raise it then? What was the rationale for raising it?
The rationale for raising it was that you could generate more electricity by having more drop or more head.
Okay.
Of water, you could generate far more electricity.
And when was that raised?
It was 1907.
Okay.
And it did generate electricity that was used by the city of Roseburg at one time.
And when did they stop using it?
It operated up until about, it had several different owners, and I believe it quit generating in the 1960s at some
Okay.
point. And at that time, PacifiCorp was the owner, and they sold it to the current owners, the Winchester Water Control District, at that time, because they thought it was fiscally irresponsible to try to operate that thing. It wasn't making any money. It was costing them more than it was generating. So they quit it.
All right, let's go back to what the other impacts.
Okay, another impact, and it's one that isn't as obvious, but it's one that I have great concerns about, and that is that there is no facility to safely collect and transport the juveniles, the smolts, that are heading down to the ocean. They essentially end up at the dam and just bail out over the side and often land on bedrock or concrete or metal that's sticking out of the dam. And this causes some mortality. It certainly causes injury, stress, and it also makes predation by mergansers, great blue herons, egrets, ospreys all congregate right there when these fish are coming out. And they all, almost all of them come out in the spring.
Okay, so that 17-foot drop.
March, April, and May is a big time for all species of all salmonids outmigrate during that period, with the exception of some Chinook, which go out in the fall.
That 17-foot drop is too much.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If there were a deep pool or something to fall into, it would be much less damaging. But right now, all they do is they fall down onto that bedrock or in some many places concrete. And there's also metal sticking out from underneath the dam that they may hit on their way down. As I said, it causes injury, it causes stress. And it may even result in mortality. If not right there, certainly downstream it will. And that prevents them from making it to the ocean. Therefore, the future populations are going to be diminished.
Right. And for the ones coming up the dam, can a salmon make a 17-foot jump?
No. No, the literature is that steelhead are capable of surmounting, under ideal conditions, 14 feet. Salmon somewhat less. So no, none, I've never seen one make it, and the literature suggests there's no way they could ever make it over 17 feet.
Okay, so this has been 60 years then, roughly 65, 64 years that the dam has not been used productively for hydropower or whatnot,
That is correct.
that the salmon have been fighting this.
You're getting a little bit into the social and political part of it, but the state of Oregon Water Resources has a criteria for private dams, or any dam actually. They have to have some public use, and public uses can be things like generation of electricity. They can be flood control. They can be irrigation, domestic water. There's a whole bunch of different ones, but Winchester has no public value. According to the water resources. So that's an interesting little thing.
Okay, it has folks living around it, but no public access.
there is public access, but it's limited to non-motorized vessels
Okay. All right.
for anyone that's not a member of their organization.
Okay. What about the lamprey? The lamprey is an animal that people are becoming more and more aware of.
Pacific lamprey are a native fish, a very primitive fish, and up until about the 1960s, Winchester used to get tens of thousands of them crossing the dam, and they were extremely abundant in many rivers and streams in Oregon and Washington, California, and the abundance has dropped dramatically in the last 50, 60 years, to the point now where instead of getting tens of thousands, we're getting in the hundreds or maybe low thousands. So I'm a huge decline in their population. And they are what we call a keystone species. And what that means is that they are providing more than just their own success or their own survival, their own population, in that in large numbers, what they are doing, and salmon do the same thing, is they're bringing marine-derived nutrients to the river system, to the whole aquatic system. And it is basically fertilizer. They die after spawning, and they become part of the whole nutrient cycle, both in the water and on the land as well. Vegetation uses it. Things like bears hauls carcasses uphill. And the nutrients that are bought from those bodies get into the soil and are taken up by vegetation. So they played a really important role, and do if they return in appropriate numbers, they will provide a lot of value to the whole river system. The nutrient basis in the North Umpqua is not real high compared to some rivers, and large numbers of dying salmon and lamprey were a really important part of the ecology of the North Umpqua.
And can you characterize the lamprey for me? I'm sometimes surprised how few people know what that animal is. What does that animal look like, and how's it characterized?
It looks like an eel. It has a long, thin body. It doesn't have any fins on their side. They have a fin along their dorsal surface, their back. It's a very, very small one. They have what's called a buccal funnel, which is basically a sucker for a mouth. They are parasitic in the ocean. They feed on other fish and they attach themselves, secrete a substance that prevents coagulation, and then they basically suck on the blood from their prey. They don't always kill them. And quite often, if you look at fish crossing the ladder or anywhere, you'll see round sores on their side, and those are from lamprey. They survived. So, and they grow to about 3 feet as adults, maybe even a little bit longer. They're pretty good size, but they're eel-like. They look just like an eel.
Now, can they use the fish ladder?
They can, but it's very difficult for them. There's been a number of attempts to modify the fish ladder to make it more lamprey friendly, and it probably has helped some, but they don't go around corners very well, and the fish ladder has a number of them, and that's one of their hardest things. I've actually seen them surmount the dam itself
How do they do that?
with their sucker.
Explain that to me.
They swim and move up a few inches and then attach, and then a couple more inches and attach, and a couple more inches and attach, and they eventually make it up.
Kind of like
But
an
it's
inchworm.
very few of them. But they were designed to do that. They've been surmounting waterfalls that many salmon and steelhead cannot, because of that ability. Willamette Falls is a great example. That's a major falls. And before the fish ladder was put in there, only two species of salmonids could enter the Willamette above Willamette Falls, and that was spring chinook and winter steelhead. All the other species couldn't make it over, but lamprey could.
Lamprey could almost like they're rock climbing it,
Yeah.
basically.
Basically, yeah, as long as it's wet, they can use it.
Oh, that's neat. I understand that, I don't know if you could speak to this, but I understand they have a great cultural significance to the Native American tribes.
Well, certainly they do, because they were one of the first aquatic species to return to the rivers in spring, and they were harvested extensively and provided some of the early nourishment as they were coming out of the winter months. And because there was and they were abundant, they were extremely abundant, and so they provided a lot of nourishment, anything, and they were just, of value. They had a value to the indigenous peoples, and I'm sure that they miss them. And there is a limited amount of harvest allowed at Willamette Falls if there's enough coming over. But right now, the numbers basically coastwide are so low that they're not really able to do much.
And I've also understood some people refer to them as a buffer species for the salmon, that they actually help the salmon survive by providing a buffer between them and the predators. Could you explain that?
I'm not sure that's absolutely true. I
Okay.
guess it could be in the ocean. I think that would probably occur in that if there was an abundance of lamprey, some of the larger predators would take the lamprey. They're probably easier to catch than a salmon or a steelhead. But in the river, they really don't make that much of a difference. They
Okay.
utilize similar habitat, but in terms of being a buffer, I don't see that.
Okay. Lamprey have become a favorite of mine lately, so I've been doing a little research. Tell me about their larval stages and how that relates to the dam.
Okay, yeah. The dam over the years has collected a fair amount of fine sediment behind it, and the lamprey, the juvenile lamprey, burrow down into soft substrate and stayed there from 3 to 7 years
Wow.
as filter feeders. They're blind; they don't even have eyes. And they filter stuff that comes down through the river and actually helps clean the river. And they're extremely abundant. If you remember from the news with the last repair work last August, ODFW estimated that 550,000 juveniles were lost because of the drawdown of the lake in order to do the repairs.
Did they not know they were there?
Oh, they knew they were there. ODFW gave them an incidental take permit for 30,000. In other words, they allowed them to basically kill as many as 30,000. Well, it ended up being far more than that in their estimate. And they fined them a lot.
Wow.
Their fine was $27.6 million
Wow.
for that fish kill. Anyway, they live for 3 to 7 years as juveniles, and then they transform in the spring into, they grow an eye, and they become a swimming organism in the river, and they go downstream just like juvenile salmon and steelhead, go to the ocean, spend 1 to 3 or even 4 years in the ocean where they feed. And when they return, they come back up the rivers and spot, and actually they stay in the river up underneath crevices and rocks and various kind of den-like places for a full year before they spawn. They come up in the fall, come up in the fall, or excuse me, they come up in the spring, and they spend the entire year, and then they spawn the following spring.
Okay.
And that's pretty unusual, and they don't feed at all during that time. So they're living off of those resources.
So if you say, okay, you say that they spend as a juveniles 2 to 7 years in the sediment, and you say that 500,000 or so were killed. So they weren't just killing 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds. They were killing, or the ones that died were perhaps between 2 and 7 years old.
Well, between 1 and 7 years
One
old.
and seven. So
Yeah,
that could be several generations that were
that is
damaged.
correct. And I think that's really significant in that you're not going to replace 7 generations in 1 year,
Right.
even if you made for, great habitat. That habitat below there or above the dam is kind of an artificial habitat. It's there because the dam's there and the silt was deposited there. But the numbers of adults that are making it further up into the basin, the North Umpqua watershed is 1 million acres, and there are well over 150 miles of suitable habitat that lamprey don't go to at all because there's not enough of them. And so, if you take the dam out and you lose that sediment, you're going to lose that little population in that artificial environment. But you would gain all the rest of the production in the rest of the watershed, which would be much, much greater and more
Okay.
natural.
That makes sense. Okay. Tell me about What other kind of scientific implications have the fish faced?
Okay, the repairs of the dam this last August was done under all the permits that are required for that kind of work from both state and federal agencies. Something like six or seven different agencies have responsibilities, and they got all their permits. And most of those permits had certain restrictions and guidance as to what they could do. And unfortunately, when they started the work, there was a lot of unpermitted activity that went on, including toxic substances were discharged into the water, such as green concrete, which they were supposed to sequester such that it didn't get into the river, but it did. They also, totally outside of their proposal and what was not permitted at all, was they used a whole bunch of rubber tire mats in order to get heavy equipment into the area where they wanted to do the work on the downstream side of the dam. Those, it's been shown clearly that those rubber tire mats exude a toxic substance, and that gets carried on downstream. So those two things are pretty significant, and DEQ actually issued a fine for water quality violations, both the concrete and the rubber mats. And also another impact, I mean, it's pretty obvious, is that because the water was drawn down, the fish ladder didn't operate at all. There was no water at all going through the fish ladder. Therefore, all fish passage was stopped for almost a full month. And that was at a time when, to be fair, that's when the least number of fish or least number of species of fish would be moving up the North Umpqua. They would primarily be summer steelhead, perhaps some late spring Chinook. But the numbers would be probably, if you had to pick a month to do something to stop fish passage, August is probably the best month. But it did stop for a full month. And that was exacerbated primarily because of high water temperatures. Any fish that were there, and there were fish there, we could see them jumping at the spillway. Where the river was basically running out through one little area on the very south side. And there was fish there because we could see them jumping. And water temperatures in August are, if not lethal, they're very, very close to lethal to our cold water fish, our native salmon and steelhead. So that could result in them actually utilizing more of their stored nutrients that they would need to continue their journey up to their spawning areas, and they may have basically run out of energy before they made it to where they were going to spawn, and or perhaps they may have actually been a mortality as well.
So does lack of flow increase the water temperatures?
No. The total flow of the river didn't change. It just changed where it was coming from. When the spill gates are closed, the water runs over the top of the dam. When spill gates are open, all the water goes out the spill gate and there's nothing going over the dam. I guess I'll close on my discussion of what they did this past August, or the repairs that they attempted there. It appears to me, and I was out there quite a bit and viewed a lot of what was going on. And it appears to me that they were really focusing on the structural integrity of the dam, and they did very little to address any of the fisheries or aquatic issues. And in fact, they may have made things worse
What was
by
the
putting.
structural integrity that they were trying to fix? What was specifically they were working on?
The dam has been inspected a number of times by Water Resources, Oregon Department of Water Resources, and it was found to be a high hazard dam. That it was so old, and it was of a structure type that can fail very easily. It basically is just a bunch of wooden cribs filled with rock. That's all it is. And all it would take would be for one part of that crib to break during a real high flow event, and the whole dam would go. And so they were trying to, they were basically instructed or told, you will make this safer. Because there are people downstream that I live downstream from there. And there's also people that would be recreating that could be affected. There could be, you know, boaters, fishermen, hikers, bird watchers, anybody that was along the river. If that, when that dam went, it could be very dangerous and could result in property damage and perhaps even mortality to people. So that's why they focused on that. They were told to.
So safety issues.
They were also told to focus on fixing some of the fisheries issues, and they really did not do any of that.
Right. Let me remind our guests, this is Living Downstream on 99.7 KQUA. I'm your host, Julie Lowe, and we're speaking with Jeff Dose, a fisheries biologist, about the impacts, scientific impacts of the Winchester Dam on fish. So is any community members getting their water, for instance, from that river at this point?
From the river?
Right.
Yes. Yes. The entire water supply for the city of Roseburg comes from the North Umpqua. Most people don't realize that
right.
It's basically pumped from the North Umpqua over the divide into the South Umpqua watershed, which Roseburg lies in. and also there is the Umpqua Basin water, which also services a number of people that they get their water from the river. And that intake is located just downstream from the country club.
Okay.
So there's, I'd say, I've heard anyway, roughly a third of all the water users in Douglas County get their water from the North Umpqua.
So when you mentioned those tire mats and whatnot, that would potentially impact water quality?
Potentially, yes. They were removed, but we really don't know if there is some toxins that remain in the substrate or, you know, on rocks or
right,
on the bank that would be, could be mobilized when the flows come up. We just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's potentially, there is an impact there.
So when they repaired the dam for safety, did it address the ladder at all?
They did not. The ladder is really old. Like I say, became operable in 1946.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a number of attempts over the years to try to improve its efficiency, but it's still based on a 1946 engineering design and would not be built today at all. It does not meet any of the current modern standards for fish passage. And it's fallen apart in some places. There's a lot of eroded concrete. There's some metal sticking up, some rebar that injures fish occasionally. If you watch enough fish going through there, you'll see fresh wounds on some of the fish. And that's from, swimming up through that, either jumping futilely at the dam or going through the fish ladder or both.
So none of the repairs address the problem of the disconnect between the flow and the ladder entrance.
That is correct. There was no attempt at all to resolve that. And there was no attempt to actually stop the flow through holes in the dam. There are a lot of holes in the dam. They're still there, which present false attraction. There's also an area on the very south side, right near the concrete structure that used to hold the generator, that is actually located on a soft substrate, not on bedrock. And the river continually erodes underneath the dam at that point. And that also causes a queue of a lot of false attraction flow as well. And then the final false attraction flow is the water over the dam itself. It to a fish, it just seems like a waterfall.
Yeah, it's the full width of that river.
It's the full width of the river. And so between the hole on the, what I call the hole on the south side, which is being eroded away by the river, the false flow through the dam, the holes in the dam, and the flow over the river, all three of those things combined to greatly delay and confuse the fish trying to find the fish ladder. And they did nothing really to address any of those big issues. And the only re really there's only one way that you could resolve the attraction into the fish ladder. As I mentioned, the Corps of Engineers says there are the two biggest factors are the location of the entrance and a adequate attraction flow.
Right.
This has neither, and the only way to resolve that would be to build a completely different structure on the south side with modern engineering standards, two modern engineering standards, and probably greatly increase the flow. And that would be a very expensive endeavor, but that's probably the only thing that could make that within modern standards for fish passage at a dam.
So, who could be responsible for that cost?
It would be the owner of the dam.
Oh.
Winchester Water Control District.
Okay. Does a dam contribute in any really way to broader conservation efforts in our region? Like some people do say that it provides great habitat for the larval lampreys, but does it contribute to any broader conservation issues?
No, it does not. It is a detriment to the ecological issues. And as I mentioned before, even the apparent benefit of having that sediment stored behind the dam and providing habitat for juvenile lamprey is an artificial habitat. And it in no way does that adequately cover the loss of all the rest of the basin as productive habitat for lamprey. So there's no benefit, there's nothing but detriment
What
from
about the
that dam.
dam limiting the passage of non-native fish farther up the Umpqua?
It does not prevent passage upstream. Of the one that people are most concerned about is smallmouth bass. Smallmouth bass are in the North Umpqua, below the dam, and I've heard reports. I've not personally observed them, but I've heard reports that people have observed them above the dam as well. There, the fish ladder itself provides no obstacle to smallmouth bass. They're perfectly capable of surmounting that fish ladder. In order to get to the North Umpqua, they had to go over several very substantial rapids, which are far more challenging than the fish ladder at Winchester Dam. Burkhart's Rapids, which is about a half mile upstream from River Forks, is a very substantial barrier. And also, Red Beach Rapids is also a substantial barrier. And if they made it over those, and they did, they would have no trouble at all getting up the, over that through that fish ladder. And also, I've observed large-scale suckers go up and down that ladder on a repeated basis, and they're not known for to be great swimmers.
Right.
And so, if a large-scale sucker can make it through there, I'm sure smallmouth bass. I know that smallmouth bass can make it as well, and ODFW has said as such.
Right. Okay. Are there any future plans or initiatives to enhance the fish passage at Winchester that you are aware of?
Well, yes, there is. There is a ongoing lawsuit by a coalition of several organizations that are suing the Winchester Water Control District for violation of the Federal Endangered Species Act because we have coho salmon, which are listed species as threatened. And that lawsuit is in progress. I can't go into any details because I'm one of the players in that
Right.
as an expert witness to it. So I can't go into any great detail, but that is what's going on. And then the other is citizens are writing letters to the editor and protesting. Around town and out at the fish ladder. And so And actually, I noticed that in last week's news review, they listed the 10 top stories of the year, 2023, and Winchester Dam was number two.
Wow. Wow.
Number one was the Taiyi Complex fire.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah.
So it's of high interest, that's for sure. And certainly there are people that would like to keep the dam. But there's seems like a lot of the populace also want to see it gone.
Well, tell me about
And
the benefits of the dam. Like, what is the point of keeping it? What are the benefits? There's got to be benefits.
well, the benefit to the owners is primarily is it becomes a private water ski lake.
Oh, the lake behind it. Okay.
The lake is they use it they recreate at it. It probably improves their property value. Having lakeside, although there's nothing wrong with riverside either, because
Right.
they would have it, the dam was gone. There is, I suppose, some management benefit in that there is the ability to count fish that go up the fish ladder, and so you can get a better estimate of how many of different species and when they're running, the time run timing, and so forth. There's some benefit from that,
And of
from a
course,
management standpoint.
that just tells you that you're just counting the fish who are able to find it,
That is correct.
which is an incomplete count of fish in total, I would assume.
Yeah, it's less than a perfect system for sure, and there are innumerable, not innumerable, there are several effective ways to census populations of fish and rivers, and they do it all over the Pacific Northwest, everywhere there are salmon, and most of those rivers that are being managed by state agencies, Oregon, Washington, California, don't have dams and counting chambers. They have other methods that are useful as well. So the other benefit, if you are of a certain mindset, is that it is a place where you can take brood stock for a hatchery program. In other words,
Okay.
you can basically shunt fish that are coming up the fish ladder into a holding pen, net them out, put them in a truck, and haul them up to a hatchery someplace.
Right. Kind of like grazing cattle. Okay. And is there a way to improve the dam so that is there an A or a B category? Like, is the removal of the dam is what's necessary to help the fish, or would there be a way to repair the ladder that would help both the lamprey and the other fish?
Well, I've always said that really there are two alternatives, and one is to completely resolve the issues that I mentioned earlier, the false attraction, the location of the entrance relative to the main flow of the river. In other words, a complete rebuild of the whole place, stop all the holes, solve the hole at the south end. Provide some sort of a mechanism to collect and safely pass juveniles over the dam, which is engineeringly it's possible. It's being done right now at another dam on the North Umpqua, Soda Springs Dam, which is the lowermost dam of the North Umpqua hydropower project that PacifiCorp runs, has state-of-the-art upstream and downstream passage facilities. It's possible. It can be done. That's one alternative. It's expensive, but it would work. It wouldn't be as good as taking it out, but it would work. The other alternative is removal, just complete removal. And that would provide for a completely natural distribution of all populations of organisms.
Which might also open another income string of recreation, whitewater and fishing and whatnot, if we had the Wild River running through.
It's if you ever go in a hot day in August, go out to Amaker and try to find a parking place. It's very popular already.
Okay.
I think that probably the long-term benefit of removal would be or adequate change to the whole system, complete rebuild, would be better populations, larger populations of wild fish, both salmon and steelhead, all the six different species that I mentioned, and that would attract people as it already does, but it would, could attract even more people, anglers and people that just want to view a river. I mean, it would improve, I think, what's already a really good thing in the North Umpqua.
Well, let's say we do nothing beyond what we've done now. Do you anticipate further repairs being needed at further cost to further people? Is this an ongoing story that will have to keep happening?
Oh, absolutely. I can't speak for them, but I believe that the owners are going to, would strongly resist spending the money to make it a modern facility, rebuild everything. They would also resist removing it, even though Water Watch of Oregon has offered to pay the total cost of removal. But they've rejected that offer also. So really, I think that what it's going to be an ongoing story, and it'll go on until such time as the lawsuit is finalized, which could be years. I mean, those things take quite a while, and it depends on how many appeals you get into the whole legal concept of it. And I'm not a lawyer, but my observations things don't happen very quickly. So it'll be status quo for a while.
Could you give us any examples of success stories of dam removals in other parts of the country that improved fish passage and fish recovery?
There's a couple that come to mind right now to me, and the most important one is on the Elwha River in Washington. The Elwha River has had two really high dams, 100 plus feet dams, low, at the very lower end part of that river. And prior to the, and those dams are about the same age as Winchester. They were over 100 years old. And the watershed above it is in primarily in Olympic National Park. And so it's pristine spawning and rearing habitat. But there was no fish passage provided when those dams were built. So there was no, for over 100 years, there was no salmon or steelhead or they had bull trout, cutthroat trout that were found there originally that were no longer make it up there. A handful of species did manage to hang on in a little stretch of river between the lowermost dam and Puget, or not Puget Sound, but yeah, Puget Sound, which it flows into. But anyway, those dams were removed about 5 or 6 years ago, both of them. Tremendous amount of sediment. Everybody was worried that it was going to just, clog up everything, and two high dams with a very erosive geology, and it was almost a non-event. It washed out after 2 years and became reestablished a river channel upstream of where the dams were, and there has been tremendous recovery of all species native to that river. Some of it was done with introducing some hatchery folks fishes to it, but many of them just reestablished themselves. Once they're given half a chance within 2 generations, they are capable of doing that. So that's probably the best example right now. There's been several others, one on the Sandy River in Oregon that have greatly increased wild populations of steelhead. And there was one on the White Salmon River in Washington that did the same thing. And all of those, there was a very short-term adverse impact from sediment, but in the long term, that was very short-term. In the long term, the values to fish production and just aquatic ecology was greatly improved.
Oh. And what were the benefits of those dams? Were their benefits long gone, or were they still in use as dams?
The Elwha dams did generate electricity,
Okay.
so they did have public purpose. The one on the Sandy, I'm not sure. It probably provided some irrigation water. I'm not sure. I'm not positive. The one on the White Salmon, I don't think that there was a, it didn't generate any electricity, I don't believe. I don't think that it was used for irrigation, but I'm not positive on those, to be honest with you. But Elwha did
Interesting.
generate electricity.
So is there any way that our local community is informed and educated about the dam, or kept informed and educated?
Well, there's been a number of public presentations. I've made some. There's been, a number of opinion pieces in our local paper, as well as papers other in other parts of the state. It's of interest, obviously, to agencies, and they put out press releases occasionally. Those are the primary ways that I know of, and presentations like this, I think, are
Right.
probably a mechanism as well. So, yeah, I mean, it is a pretty big issue, and most people don't really understand all the ramifications of it unless they, have listened to something like this or observed some presentations or read some of the articles. And there's also counter articles, many of which are inaccurate, in my opinion, but so be it.
Yeah. The two I had heard is that it's a, habitat for the lamprey larvae, and that it keeps invasive species from going up the river.
Yeah.
So, one more time for me, can you characterize how special the upper Umpqua is, and why?
The North Umpqua, because it has that diverse assemblage of salmonids that are not found anywhere else in Oregon other than the Rogue, is pretty unique and has brought anglers to the North Umpqua for probably 100 years. Zane Grey used to have a camp up there. Steamboat Inn and everything associated with that brought people in, and still does, although the fishing has declined substantially. And that's primarily because of the presence of summer steelhead. To be able to go out and catch a steelhead in the summertime is a pretty rare thing. There's only three populations of summer steelhead in all of Oregon coastal rivers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The Seletz, the North Umpqua, and the Rogue are the only rivers, coastal rivers in Oregon, that have summer steelhead populations. And historically, the North Umpqua had the largest population, and that brought people from literally from around the world to angle the fish there. And they brought, they bought things. They stayed in hotels. They bought food.
Right.
They bought fishing gear, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, and they still come. But the river has been closed 2 out of the last 3 years during the summer because the populations of summer steelhead are so low. ODFW, I'm sure reluctantly but wisely, they closed the river to
Right.
protect the few that were coming back. It's also a really nice river for rafting and kayaking.
Right.
The upper river is very popular. There's some reaches there that have some pretty good rapids that people enjoy challenging themselves with. It's obviously a beautiful river. I mean, it has visual qualities that are, not found everywhere.
That's outstanding.
It is, and there's the North Umpqua Trail is a tremendous trail. It's being repaired since the Archie fire. A lot of it, there's a lot of downed trees and stuff across it, but that brings a lot of people in just to hike that trail. It's really a nice trail. Bird watchers, botanists, amateur botanists love to go there. There's a lot of unique wildflowers up there that some locals have kind of adopted and studied and have a festival every year around wildflowers, North Umpqua and Glide. So it's got a lot of really neat attributes. It's got some problems, and a lot of it is, well, I wouldn't say a lot of it. I'd say all of it is probably man caused, human caused. But it's still pretty intact, and a lot of that is because a lot of it's federal ownership.
Jeff,
Yeah.
this has been awesome. This has been such a treat for me to speak with you. I thank you so much for your time. This is such important information to get out, and I've learned so much today.
Well, good. I'm happy to do it, and I hope your listeners are intrigued a little bit and maybe look into it and become a participant in our community.
I sure hope so. Let me remind them. This has been an episode of Living Downstream. I'm your host, Julie Lowe. I've been speaking with Jeff Dose, a retired fisheries biologist, on the scientific impacts of the Winchester Dam on fish. If you dropped in late or missed any part of the interview or any interview in our series, you could find past episodes at umpquawatersheds.org. And thank you for listening.